Chair and members of the committee. I have a few prepared remarks, and then my intent is to turn it over to people far smarter than myself, the mayor and the finance director of the city of St. Paul. And although I like my other Irish guy, I think it's the finance director that will make me look really bad. Or could.
Thank you.
Members, St. Paul's has a big problem. And House File 4121 hopefully takes care of a big part of that. House File 4121 extends the duration of the City of St. Paul's downtown 7th place tax income and finance district. This TIF district is set to expire this summer, and this bill will extend it to December 31st, 2030. These difficult times call for extraordinary measures to help solve budget problems. This TIF extension will help the River Center, Convention Center remain competitive and revitalize the Minnesota Event District. With me today, I have the mayor and Chris Coleman and the finance director, Matt Smith. I realize that this committee has had extensive discussions on pre-79 TIF district extensions. We are in a big need in the city of St. Paul. We are all up here to solve problems. Some of us have expertise in one area versus another. If this does not suit you, this particular frame does not suit you, I certainly hope that the tax chair and the other members of the committee will help us figure out how to get St. Paul out of this particular box, because it is serious. It's a serious problem for my city and my taxpayers. With that, I'd like to turn it over to the mayor and finance director, Matt Smith.
Welcome, Mayor Coleman.
Welcome, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Chris Coleman, mayor of the city of St. Paul, and happy that I'm able to be here with you this morning. In your packets, you have various letters of and resolutions of support for the proposal for House File 4121. It's a city council resolution. The Ramsey County Board has also presented a resolution. The St. Paul Chamber of Commerce is here in support of the project. St. Paul Building and Construction Trades and the St. Paul Public School District also have provided letters of support for this. The St. Paul Event District is a district that all Minnesotans can enjoy. In the space of just a few downtown blocks, we have the River Center Convention Center, Roy Wilkins Auditorium, XL Energy Center, which was the home of a disappointing overtime loss last night that we're still recovering from. We have 317 on Rice Park, which is the old Minnesota building. We have the Ordway Center for Performing Arts. We have the Science Museum of Minnesota. These cultural, educational, and entertainment venues are an excellent benefit to Minnesotans and a great niche in the event industry. Whether it's a trip to the XL for a high school hockey tournament or a pro hockey game, a Broadway show at the Ordway, the Hmong New Year Festival at the River Center, or the latest exhibit at the Science Museum, the district carries, enriches our entire state. The energy, excitement, and economic vitality in St. Paul this past weekend is a testament to the importance of our event district. Last night, if you saw what was going on with the Wild and all the venues that were bubbling with activity, and this whole spring through all the various things has been very, very exciting because of the amenities in the cement district. Nearly 4.5 million people visit this district each year. Approximately 1,100 people are employed. It generates nearly $200 million in economic impact through ticket purchases and other spending. For the convention center, each day that an attendee is at that facility, they generate $318 a day in meals, lodging, entertainment, and related meeting costs. The public-private development at Cleveland Circle that we are proposing could generate up to 350 jobs. And we believe that we could begin construction as soon as the Republican National Convention is done in September of this year. The lot on the Cleveland Circle site is being used to host kind of the staging area for the media and other things for the convention. The Cleveland Circle site is under a tentative developer status with a group, City Center Retail, that believes that they can, break ground this fall on a restaurant and office space and a public community event center on that site that would extend the event district. It will, hopefully begin this year and generate 250 construction jobs. The Minnesota Event District results from a decade of public and private investment. The Smith Avenue Transit Hub, which is a city and federal project, the XL Energy Center, which is a state and city and privately funded project, the River Center was a city project, Rice Park, Landmark Park, Central Library upgrades, they were all city projects. I could continue to go through the list. There has been an incredible amount of investment over the last many years in this area that has made it so successful. As each organization has surveyed opportunities to improve its service, it's reached the same conclusion. They can accomplish much more by working together. Together, they're developing a plan that will capitalize on the strengths of each organization and facility. Together, they've created the Minnesota Event District. I'd like to introduce Matt Smith at this time. I'm sure many of you know Matt well. He will outline kind of the proposal before you and how we have structured this and why this would have the impact that we hope it will have.
Thank you, Mr. Okay. Mayor. Welcome, Commissioner Smith, our former Commissioner Smith. Nice to see you. Not all members know the role that you once played in at the Capitol in the past, and nice to have you before the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Senator members. To kind of pick up on what Mayor Coleman said, the city's goals for the event district and what we can realize there right now are really hampered by the debt burden that the River Center Convention Center is facing. And what that results in is that all the dollars that normally we would want to have to go into the maintenance and improvement of that facility, the marketing, so that the whole event district can do a better job on behalf of the city, state, and region, and our ability to make the kind of investments on the, particularly the Cleveland Circle site that the mayor talked about, are all limited by the current plans and structure. And so the city's original financing approach to this was to seek appropriation to cover the city's payments on the River Center convention bonds, and then free up local resources that could then be reinvested in the facility, improve the marketing, and ultimately help to support the other development. That that straightforward funding approach isn't succeeding. So we're here before you with a proposal that would allow us to retain a current tax without raising any tax and without, we believe, affecting the state budget, and that would still allow us to finance the kind of improvements that we'd like to see. So the bill itself is a pretty straightforward request to extend the duration of our downtown 7th Place 5th District with the necessary exceptions or flexibilities in the law that would allow us to do the kinds of things that we're talking about to support the River Center debt and to make the other investments on Cleveland Circle. We are, you know, certainly we followed closely your discussions, tech policy discussions. I think, you know, the city's view is we're trying to solve a problem in a way that doesn't cause problems for this committee or for anyone else. And I'm sure we'll have a dialogue about ways to do it. But I just emphasize we're here with a proposal that uses an existing revenue stream, doesn't require any tax that's currently in place to be raised or changed.
Thank you. Representative Mahoney, did you have further testifiers before we went to questions? Yes, I do think we're going to have some questions for the mayor and Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, after listening on audio to the other presentation last week, I was expecting questions, so I kept my testifiers to just two.
Okay. Well, if I may, and I know not everybody who was here for our previous hearing on the Minneapolis NRP situation, same kind of thing, extend our TIF smaller, but for more years. I think it's just helpful, first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Mahoney and the mayor for being flexible and putting this in a bill form so members can understand that River Center has a problem. And River Center does have a problem, and St. Paul does have a problem, and I'm personally trying to find a way to solve the problem, and I hope the whole committee will try to find a way to solve the problem. The current options are fairly grim. I think it was an accurate presentation that the straight-up way to do it would have been through an appropriation, and that's probably not going to happen in the time of a deficit. So now we've got a tax bill that, you know, the folks that sit around this committee, you know, aren't too keen on. And the reason that is the case is the same reason for the Minneapolis NRP bill, which is We all found, and we have the runs in our folders so folks can look at them again, and we probably send Ms. Dalton explain them. It does impact all other districts because pre-79s don't pay into fiscal disparities, and therefore those folks in the metro are getting less revenue there, and also rural members lose some LDA whenever we extend some of these pre-79s. So we're all trying to think through the problem here. But I think this gives us a forum and listening to Mr. Smith for us to start thinking about, well, what do we do with River Center? And I think the best way is just to have the straight up discussion and try to think through what are some options. So if it's all right with you, Representative Mahoney, I think it's helpful for Ms. Dalton to explain what the tax effects of this bill do. Not because we want to be brutal or, you know, we just want everyone to have, you know, the truth of the matter here so everyone can get their heads around what the impacts are when we extend a pre-79 TIF district. And the reason it matters is because we've got, you know, Representative Mullery and Dabney kind of went through it with their whole city watching. If you were here for that hearing, we've got the Mall of America coming next. You know, this is the place that's going to set the precedence on what are we going to do about these, and since we have not extended them, we need to understand their impact. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just noting the difference. You asked Representative Mahoney if it was okay for Ms. Dalton. You didn't ask Representative Clark if it was okay.
Well, true.
Preference for St. Paul.
You know, and I guess it's semantics. I don't think Representative Mahoney is going to have a problem with it. It's the tax committee has to understand what the impacts are when we extend any pre-79 TIF district. And the problem we have is a number of them would have liked extensions and haven't gotten them, and they have not been extended. And there is a statewide impact when you extend one. And I think what was really helpful, and I want to thank Minneapolis, who was very respectful and contributed to the discussion with Representative Danny Mullery, Loeffler, Clark, and their neighborhoods, who understood that I think a lot of people have not understood for a long time that these bills do impact every district in the state. And it is the tax committee who has to grapple with the fact that most other folks not on the tax committee probably don't know that, probably don't care, but we actually do care. So if Ms. Dalton can walk us through the run, Representative Mahoney, and I don't know Elizabeth, I don't know if the folks at the table have these runs, and
runs.
We do.
And former Commissioner Smith is used to looking at these all back in the day, over and over, but we want members to understand what the system that's going on when you extend a pre-79 TIF district. Anyway, this one's actually done on the River Center proposal, the NRP proposal. We already walked through in that one, but not everyone could be here that day. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this one is done exactly the same way that the Minneapolis one was done on LGA, which is it assumes all the other pre-1979 TIF districts are decertified except for this TIF district. Now, the net impact on everybody else's LGA is only about $900,000 from the St. Paul TIF compared to $5 million from the Minneapolis TIF, and that's because there's just much less property in the TIF district. There's only about $5 million in the St. Paul TIF district, according to paid 2007 estimates, as opposed to $30 million that was in the Minneapolis TIF district. And I think that's all I have to
say. Well, Ms. Dawn, can you, just for folks who are looking at the handout here, what's the column we're looking at, and what's the number of the column to understand the change?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, probably the column you want to look at is the column number 5, the rightmost column, and this is showing how much LGA you will either gain or lose if the St. Paul TIF district is not decertified if it's extended. And so St. Paul would gain $885,000 a year, and that means that $885,000 is coming from everybody else's, and $160,000 of it would come from Minneapolis just because there's such a large part of the appropriation.
So if that's clear to folks, it's not really the dollar amount in the discussion here, it's the tax policy. I mean, that's the problem here. Whether it's this or any other one, you're going down the road of creating a whole new ballgame for how we're going to deal with these pre-79s, because we unfortunately are the legislature who gets to deal with them. I think everybody's been watching these come, knowing they're all going to start expiring, and everybody's been sort of thankful they haven't had to deal with it. We get to deal with it this group, this year. I guess the longest we could wait is next year on these pre-79s, but we do have to
Madam
deal
Chair,
with it.
If I could,
Mayor Coleman.
Just with respect to the City of St. Paul, that is not the case. This will be decertified this June 30th. So this has to be acted upon from St. Paul's perspective this year.
So St. Paul has to be dealt with this year. I think it was Minneapolis next year, if I'm correct. But that we're not on your NRP bill, but, you know, so clarifying, I mean, that is the case. We've got these things turning off now, and the problem is, you know, folks who have been watching this knew they were going to turn off, and now we've got people in a situation where they're looking for resources to replace the resources that were coming. I think Ms. Dalton has something to add, but we do want to hear from Mr. Hines as well on the impacts on fiscal disparities. Dalton.
Madam Chair, the only thing I wanted to add is I wanted to point out that the LGA impacts occur regardless of the type of TIF district that is decertified or extended. It doesn't matter whether it is a pre-79 or a post-79 TIF district. Mr. Hines is going to talk about the fiscal disparities aspects of it. Those only occur in the pre-79 TIF districts because the post-79 TIF districts are already paying, are already contributing to the fiscal disparities pool.
Madam Chair, can I just ask one
question? Representative Solberg, yes.
I see all the rest of the cities are negative except on the, I guess it's the one, the second page or number four in the back said landfall as a positive. Why would one city have a positive?
City of Landfall. Ms. Dalton, before you answer that, could you explain? Does everyone know where the City of Landfall is?
I know where it is.
City of Landfall and City of Hilltop are these.
I know where they
are. Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, there are two things that happen to LGA. And so, as I said, LGA is impacted regardless of whether it's a pre-79 or a post-79 TIF district. But they aren't impacted exactly the same way because not only do you have more tax base now in or less tax base in St. Paul if you extend the TIF district,
mm-hmm.
but the fiscal disparities pool affects everybody else's tax base in the metro area. So how you are impacted in the metro area depends on whether you are a net gainer or a net loser. And Landfall, one of those really weird little tiny cities with very odd things happening in the fiscal disparities pool, and that's why they get impacted that way.
Okay,
so
I think it'd be helpful if Mr. Hines would talk to us about the fiscal disparities piece so we can think about it all together. Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Maury, yes.
Is this wrong? It says it would decertify on August 1, 2009, and they're saying it's 2008.
We're looking at the bill summary now, Representative Mahoney, and Representative Maury is pointing out there's a different date on the front. It says we have it. We're wrong. Representative Maury, you're right again. I guess it's wrong on here. So thank you. Mayor Coleman is confirming that this is not the date that we have here, right?
Madam Chair, I think probably the distinction is that even if they were, under any circumstances, the P79s have to end by 2009. In our case, under the debt that we have outstanding, the current debt will be extinguished such that the district would be certified absent some law change in mid-year this in 2008. So I think it's just a particularity about our district. You know, okay. That would, I think, explains the difference between what's really going on in our case and the general law that applies to pre-79s generally.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cole.
Madam Chair, before we have Mr. Hines talk about fiscal disparities, I just want to make sure I understand. I think I do, but I missed the Minneapolis presentation, so I apologize if my question is elementary or was covered then, but the reason that LGA is impacted is because we're continuing these TIF districts, so there's less taxing capacity, and that tax capacity is one of the critical components of determining LGA amounts. Is that, I mean, am I tracking that correctly?
Well, I'll let Ms. Saltman jump in here. Representative Cole, but I'd say that is right, because you're holding this value off the property tax rolls, and when you put it back on, you're relatively wealthier, therefore you need relatively less LGA. What's also going on these pre-79s, that's what we're going to hear from Mr. Hines, is they didn't have to pay into fiscal disparities. So if they get extended, they continue to not pay into fiscal disparities, which, as you know, often rural members bipartisanly think that the FD program does not affect them, and it absolutely does, because we do have an offset for fiscal disparities in the LGA formula. So if you're a recipient of LGA, we could take the city of St. Paul. If you receive LGA but you also receive FD, you have to minus your fiscal disparities tax-based equalization aid off first, and therefore the state has to throw less LGA into the pot there, because fiscal disparities is first playing that role. So whenever the state first jumps in and does fiscal disparities through tax-based equalization to Metro, your LGA goes further. So if you're a rural member, say like Representative Lanning, you're going to get more LGA to the extent that fiscal disparities tax-based equalization aid first helps the money go further in the Metro, so LGA can go further still and greater. So that's why these fiscal disparities exemptions affect every single city in the state of Minnesota. And people often aren't really grasping that, because fiscal disparities is so confusing. But it really is just another tax-based equalization program like school aids or local government aid. It's not a spending pot. It's a tax-based equalization program. So Ms. Dalton, if you want to add to represent Cole's kind of clarifying why would this impact.
Madam Chair, Representative Cole, LGA is a zero-sum game, and everybody gets aid based on their unmet need relative to everybody else's unmet need. So if St. Paul TIF district is extended, their unmet need is greater than it otherwise would have been. That means that they will get a little bit more, and everybody else will get a little bit less. It's also true that the fiscal disparities that we count in figuring out everybody's ability to pay, their net gain or loss from fiscal disparities. So if the TIF district is not decertified, there is less money in the fiscal disparities pool, and so other cities in the metro area that would gain tax base are also not gaining tax base, which means that their unmet need is also a little bit bigger, and so they gain a little bit more as well.
And then that ripples to greater Minnesota. So you're catching how it brings the whole state in.
Thank you. I apologize. I trust all this was covered in great detail when Minneapolis was here, but let me ask one additional question if I could. Was there any discussion when the Minneapolis proposal was here, and I guess I'd ask Mr. Smith or Mayor Coleman, and I don't even know if it's technically possible, if we held back some of the LGA increase, I mean, if we extend the TIF district, is there a way that we could jigger the LGA formula to hold back some of the increase that would happen if we extend the TIF district? So the TIF district gets extended, but we figure out some way to hold back some of that LGA increase so that we don't have the impact, at least to the same degree. I'm trying to find a solution here, Madam Chair. Maybe there was discussion
I think Representative Coles, I mean, that's what every city with pre-79 TIF districts would like. I mean, that's the problem. If you do it for one, you've got to do it for Representative Dabney as well, and for the Mall of America and every other city that's got a pre-79 TIF district. And you can, I mean, that can be the will of the tax committee, but you have to bring money to the table to do it. You have to still fill in the appropriation pot in LGA to hold everybody harmless. And that continues to be the rub. I think that's what Mr. Smith was saying, you know, short of a straight-up appropriation, it gets harder. And so we're grappling with the unfairness part to everyone else, but still trying to solve the River Center piece. But if I can, I'd like to get behind just sort of fair these pieces out there so we can all understand that and then go to further discussion. Mr. Hines.
Madam Chair, what I was going to talk about were the smaller of the two printouts that you would receive that says change in net tax capacity due to pre-79 TIF decertification, and then a second one-page handout that you just got after the committee hearing began that attempts to sort of describe where all the revenue flows are going. And briefly on each. I know we don't have much time. The first one, the pre-79 TIF certification printout, and this is only showing the Metro.
This one, right?
Yes.
So for Mayor Coleman.
Like five-page printout, I think
okay.
It is. And the first column on that shows each city's current net tax capacity, its tax base. Column 2 then shows the net tax capacity that is in the pre-79 TIF district. So this is all the pre-79 TIF district, not just St. Paul, obviously. And you'll see that most cities don't have pre-79 TIF districts, but there's a fair smattering that do. Column 3 then is the addition to the net tax capacity if all the decertifications occur. And your inclination is, well, why do the cities that don't have pre-79 TIF get an increase in their tax base? And the answer is, as the chairman's been saying, it's through the fiscal disparities pool. So as that tax base of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Edina, et al. Go back into the fiscal disparities pool, then all the cities in the metro get some additional tax base through the pool that's shown in column 3. And column 4 just shows that tax base as a percentage of the total tax base. And for it's not a big effect. It's less than 0.5% for most cities here. Column 5 then shows the addition to each city's net tax capacity if all except St. Paul decertify. So that's where the effect of the bill is between the column 3 and column 5. And the percentage is between column 4 and column 6. So, for instance, just taking Apple Valley, the first one of the, other than Minneapolis-St. Paul, the first line there, they gain $159,000 in tax capacity if all districts decertify, only $129,000 if we don't include St. Paul's. So their effect on their tax capacity is $30,000, which is about 0.05% of their tax base, et cetera.
Okay, and then this one?
So now I'll move on to to the one pager, which is a landscape format that says analysis of St. Paul pre-79 TIF district decertification revenues. And this is trying to sort of just capture the dollars and describe a little bit about the effects that are shown in each cell. The first row is showing the effects of the current situation with regard to the column headings show the city. And I'm just calling it general fund and special fund. So the special fund is where the TIF revenues are going now into paying off the River Center bonds. The general fund, as you know, and then the county school district, special taxing districts metro-wide, and then other taxing jurisdictions in the metro area trying to bring in all the effects. So right now, that tax base of St. Paul's is being held off the rolls, so the only money from that is the full tax capacity of that district times the total tax rate in St. Paul, and that's going to St. Paul. Nobody else is getting anything. And I should add that I think St. Paul has figures that are a little bit different than these. I'm using a year-old data, I think, on these. The data I had access to was for PAO7, and they actually have the PAO8 numbers. So it's the idea of the relative magnitude, I think that's important. So the middle row then shows what happens if all pre-79 districts decertify. And there we see that the special fund in St. Paul goes to zero because they're decertified and no longer getting anything. But the general fund of St. Paul now is getting additional tax capacity from its district decertifying, and also some from through the fiscal disparities pool from the other districts decertifying, and then also some additional LGA, as Ms. Dalton was her printout showed. So that we're getting that at about $1.7 million, about a third of what St. Paul's now collecting through the TIF project. But then the county share is about $1.9 million. Mostly that's St. Paul's TIF district coming back into the tax base, but there's also a little bit of a fiscal disparities effect there. The school district, about $1.1 million. Special taxing districts, the Housing and Redevelopment Authority, Met Council, et cetera, about 400,000, really round numbers. And then the other metro taxing jurisdictions, 0.6 million, just to show that the added amounts that, this is what they get from the St. Paul, this is the share of the St. Paul district that's going out to the other metro jurisdictions through the fiscal disparities pool. And then finally, the third line is then showing the effect of House File 4121. So you can see that the special fund in St. Paul is back at the $5.3 million that it's at right now. This is a static analysis, so this is not projecting any numbers into the future, just using the current dollars. We show some money for the general fund of St. Paul, $1.5 million, and this is due to the additional LGA they're getting, again, from the other decertifying, and the additional fiscal disparities tax base that came in as the other districts decertified. The county would get, we're showing at about $400,000, which again, that's the additional amount in the fiscal disparities pool from the other than St. Paul districts decertifying. So the difference in county revenues is the difference between the 1.9 and the 0.4, I guess. And similarly for the school district and the other special taxing jurisdictions. And then the other metro taxing jurisdictions, the fiscal disparities pool, are showing zero because under 4121, that additional amount does not go to the other communities in the metro. So leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. And I think that helps us see that a lot of impact shifting around in any pre 79 TIF district being allowed to not decertify. So we've got Simpson, Lanning, Solberg, and Coles. Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My question is probably quite simple. Maybe Mr. Michael or Mayor Coleman can answer it. How did River Center get themselves into this situation? And at the time it was built, having the history here, wasn't there a long-term plan to take care of this? And how did we get here today?
Mayor Coleman, and I have to admit I wasn't a legislator then either, so I think a bunch of us would like to understand that a little better. Mayor Coleman.
Some of us were in high school, I think. Madam Chair and Representative Simpson, the fact of the matter is this is one of the, there are a couple of facilities around the state of Minnesota that were built exclusively with local revenues. This is one of them. There was no state money that went into this facility when it was originally constructed. So it was done on the thin to begin with to get the building up and running, but there was never, when it was originally built, and I'd ask anybody that, there are several people here that can explain this a little bit better than I can, probably a lot of people that can explain better than I can, but there was never that that kind of long-term operating capital that needed to go into this facility, which is one of the problems that we're having. We simply are not, we don't have the resources to reinvest and to properly use this facility. And I don't know if somebody wants to...
Mayor, could you maybe tell us too, and I have some information that Ms. Dalton prepared yesterday, and I'm just looking at it now, we can pass out, but you know what's puzzled me is, in looking at this, in 1998 when the hockey arena was added to the Civic Center, it appears that only no more than 40% of the total local option sales tax could go to the project. That just seems crazy to me. Why limit that local option sales? That's usually what those local option sales taxes are for. Do you know why the legislature or whoever was the advocate limited that local option sales to be no more than 40%?
Well, there were several, Madam Chair, I'm not sure that I'm going to do that justice either, because the reality was this was also an attempt at the same time to do some of the neighborhood revitalization in a slightly different fashion than Minneapolis has approached it, but there was no pool of resources. So this is an attempt to get some resources to be able to reinvest in particularly at neighborhoods of need, but really across the city of St. Paul. So 50% of it went to what we call the STAR program, what evolved into the STAR program, and 10% went into arts and cultural projects as well.
Okay.
So that I know that Senator Pappas was involved in that, and others that felt very deeply about trying to create some sorts of revenue. And I think it kind of points out the general problem that we have in the city, which is, we are not here saying that this doesn't impact others. But we are really struggling to put resources together to do some of the things that we need to do generally across the city, to reinvest in this district, to be able to make up for the very significant loss of local government aid that has occurred since 2003. I think there was one of the members of the committee was looking at the number for St. Paul, and it's somewhere around $57 million right now in local government aid. Even if you tweak it, we're down from a 2003 number of about $77 million, $76 million that we're receiving. So just on that scale, I think cities, and I suspect this is the same situation that Minneapolis is dealing with, is, you know, looking at ways that we can try to capture the revenue that we have, not claiming that there's no impact, but it's really more of a capturing opportunity cost, perhaps, and with the amount of revenue that could come in through this, it would have a tremendously large impact on the city of St. Paul.
Okay, and we have to that point Representative Leff and Representative Dabney, but Mr. or Mayor Coleman, or maybe it's Mr. Smith, hearing what you just said, you know, I think traditionally local option sales taxes are perfectly designed for things like River Center, and it appears that St. Paul kind of has all this other stuff going on that you would normally put on the property tax, like neighborhood revitalization. I mean, we all weren't here when that was decided. I think, have you ever tried, though, to figure out if all of the local option sales tax could be used in the way it's really designed to be in the rest of the state, and remove some of those pieces that are being funded for through your sales tax, instead have it go through your kind of transparent property tax system? Do the numbers work for River Center? I mean, could you pull that off?
Madam Chair, I'll let Mr. Smith answer the specifics of that question, but the reality of it is it would fix one problem and break something else, and break it very significantly. Right now, our Planning and Economic Development Department has effectively no flexible sources of revenue to do some of the projects other than the STAR money, and so I suspect that it because of the way it's structured, we're trying to deal with it in the context of what we have.
And I presume it's a political nightmare. I mean, I get that, because you right away bring all the political folks to bear on, what, you're taking our money and you're moving. I mean, I get that. I was just meaning purely the dollars, would the dollars work? But I hear what you're saying. Mr. Smith?
Well, Madam Chair, I just as what the mayor said, you know, since 2003, the city has worked very hard within the limits of the local sales tax law to try to use those dollars in a way that, you know, meets the spirit of the law and also, you know, frankly helps backfill for some of the local government aid reductions and also take some of the pressure off the property tax levy bill.
Okay.
So, you know, this year, in fact, we're about $5 million of local sales taxes essentially being used to provide property tax relief.
Okay. Representative West and Dabney and Lanning. Representative West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to answer an initial question that you had to, you know, in terms of what local communities typically rely on for the purposes of property taxes, I think maybe Mayor Coleman said it best when he said it would fix one problem and break another. We've been putting everything else on property taxes for quite a few years in St. Paul, and that's a huge concern. The mayor and Mr. Smith and other people from the city have been coming to me for the past 3 or 4 years trying to say, this is a state of desperation here, which is very different from, you know, trying to build a mall or something like that. I know there are a number of people around this table who are afraid to drive to parts of my district, actually most parts of my district, kind of like Mullery's. Yeah, you're probably afraid to represent Mullery. I'm kidding. We went up to Mullery's district, obviously, in North Minneapolis, and it's a similar situation. There are needs that we have there that are very different. But, Madam Chair, my first question is for Ms. Dalton. Ms. Dalton, when you stated that LGA is distributed based on relative needs of the cities, that's relative needs according to what is delineated in the formula, right?
Right.
Okay. And my next question then is for Mr. Smith. I recall, Mr. Smith, that almost a third of St. Paul's tax base is historically off the rolls because of buildings like this and universities and churches, etc. Is that still the case?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative West, in general terms, I would say somewhere between a quarter and a third is the numbers that I've been quoted about the amount of potential tax base that's off the rolls. I got to add, though, that it's notoriously difficult to measure precisely the value of tax-exempt property because universities don't get sold on the market very often.
And Mr. Smith and Mayor Coleman, and you should know that I'm sure you know your St. Paul delegation of legislators is relentless in pursuit of a solution here. In fact, Representative Lash has raised this to me before. Representative Tao wanted to do a bill to sort of start taxing all these untaxed parcels in St. Paul, and in fact, you know, the Minnesota Constitution does not let St. Paul tax these properties. It's delineated in the Minnesota Constitution that the capital, you know, the government buildings and the universities can't be. So whenever people kind of take a stab at that, it's the old Minnesota Constitution, and I think Representative Leff raises a good point that St. Paul has some trials that other communities don't have. Representative
Leff. Madam Chair, we have nothing but the highest respect for all institutions of government.
Yes.
And
then,
also,
Madam Chair, there's only one place in John Lash's district, and it's but I'm afraid to walk at any time of the day. And it's about 1,200 Maryland. I mean, Bill.
At his place?
Yeah, you stay away. I do have a concealed carry permit, Madam Chair. Also, I don't see the Archbishop down here either, so I bet if we were willing to tax that other domed building down the street, we might take care of our problem, but he's not here, so I'll not go there. But, Mr. Smith, does the formula take into account at all this disparity? Anyway.
I'm sure Representative West, I think probably there are other staff that are probably going to want to comment on this question, too, but I think... I would say, in general, local government aid formulas try to, in some way, by measuring tax base. The question about whether it does it perfectly, adequately, and, you know, reflects the cost side of the equation of servicing particular government buildings, I think that's always open for debate. I think that's probably the best answer I can give. I would say it reflects it in part, attempts to reflect it in part.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just by way of comment, Madam Chair and members, this is part of the problem that St. Paul faces. It relies on a much larger percentage for local government aid than do many other cities. We've been attempting to do our best to move away from that Minneapolis has tried to do, I think, as well, to rely less on it. But it's very difficult based upon the scenario that was just laid out, and St. Paul is in desperate straits based upon local government aid cuts that occurred for the last near decade, and also based on other factors, as we've seen, which came down this week in the bonding bill. We're really attempting to resolve unmet needs and are difficult to do it. I think that puts us in a special situation, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. Representative Downey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Simpson, Mayor Coleman and Mr. Smith gave you good, detailed, and specific answers to your question about how did St. Paul get into this mess? But I want to step back and put a larger frame, because I think that frame big enough to cover both cities. And I think that is because there's a pattern here of the state asking the two central cities to carry the burden of state resources, convention centers, entertainment venues, baseball stadiums, and the like, without providing state revenues to support those entities. While the central cities still have the additional challenges to a greater extent than the rest of the state of concentration of poverty, aging infrastructure, aging housing stock, elements like that, that the LGA formula attempts to respond to, but of course that was cut. The LGA was cut. So I think we've got a dynamic where the central cities are asked to carry statewide burdens without receiving statewide resources to help finance those burdens.
Thank you.
Just to that point, it seems to me, though, that in this particular case, as I understand, sales tax dollars that were to be used for the bond payment and the payment structure has been diverted to other avenues. And when you make that decision to make that diversion, then there's a ramification. Is that correct?
I don't know. We're going to let Mr. Smith seems to think it's not, so we're going to let him respond. But I want to quick tell, because I do want to get to Representative Lanning, because he wasn't here for the Minneapolis hearing, and he was one of the members. I'd like to hear his thoughts on this. But I do want to say that we did just pass this out, so people can peruse it later, kind of the history of St. Paul's local sales tax and kind of what was going on. And this is pre-everybody. This is pre-Mayor Coleman. And we can, you know, use it as we think through strategies going forward. Mr. Smith, to Representative Simpson's question about paying the bond.
Yeah. And to Representative Simpson, the requirement that 40% go into servicing debt and nervous center, that's always been met. We've never gone below that.
Okay.
That full portion of the sales tax that's authorized to be applied to this problem is being applied. The comments we were making about being flexible is, you know, we have a law that says 50% needs to go to neighborhood economic development kinds of uses. And in recent years, under the LGA cut pressure and tax levy pressure that we face, we found creative ways within that law essentially to still meet those goals but provide some property tax relief. So, the, yes.
Okay, so Representative Simpson, I think that clears up the confusion there, but I think Representative Simpson and I probably would agree that the 40-60 thing might have not have been the wisest move as far as having the neighborhoods funded on the local option sales, you know, we can't go back in time on that unless we have a new bill. But, you know, that's not really what we're on today. We want to get to trying to solve River Center. Representative,
I just make one quick comment.
Yeah, Representative Lanning, but first we'll hear Mayor Coleman's response.
I just would like to say to Representative Simpson's point that the reality of it is that this was the half cent was built in the way that it was to create this pool of resources for neighborhood reinvestment. So it wasn't we were taking money out of the half cent and you know that should have gone to the River Center complex, because otherwise it would have been structured as a quarter cent or some other denomination. So this was not. You have to kind of go back into the context, and it's not as simple as saying, why are you diverting money? This is an additional pool of resources that was created.
And that's fair. That's an important piece of information. I should tell you, you know, the people who sit on the tax committee generally don't even like local option sales taxes, don't want any more, and kind of fight the folks who've got them forever and for lots of purposes, and mm-hmm. a grandfather is the biggest vendor, so we probably don't want to expand that there. Representative Marquardt has not even heard a local option sales tax bill this year in his division. That's how popular they are. But Representative Simpson.
Well, just one point, and I'll be quiet. But if you take the total revenues of $20 million and you break it down to $6 million for River Center, I don't think that's 40%.
Mr. Smith.
Okay, Madam Chair, Representative Simpson. I provided a budget page to the staff, which you have in front of you, which shows both the annual sales tax receipts, which is that $15 million-ish line at the top, as well as other revenues, which bring the number up. And those other revenues really primarily reflect loan repayments out of the Neighborhood Star program in earlier years, because the city and the Neighborhood Star program operates it in part as a grant program, but we'd like to try to do as much lending out of that fund as we can so we get the dollars back and they recycle. So that's why you see the distinction.
Okay, thank you. Representative Lanning.
Well, finally, thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for your efforts to have full disclosure on this. These are important decisions, as the discussion so far has illustrated. So thank you for your effort to have full disclosure. There are a couple of things that are pretty clear to me about this situation. Number one, there is a problem that needs to be fixed. And the other thing that's clear to me is that there are problems with the solution. And what I'm interested in hearing, and we don't have time to hear this fully today, but I'd like to know what the city of St. Paul has done to head off this problem or try to fix this problem before now. And I don't want to hear Representative Dabney, you know, all the reasons why, you know, what the state has or hasn't done. Obviously, the city of St. Paul has the responsibility here to avoid problems, as any city does. And I'd like to know what are the things that the city of St. Paul has done along the way to head off this problem, to try and address this problem. And I know we don't have time to get to that today, but obviously we're not going to take final action on this today anyway. And so that's what I'm not clear about. What have you done to head off this problem?
Madam Chair,
Mayor Coleman.
Madam Chair, Ms. Representative Lanning, are you speaking in the broader terms of the overall budget challenges or specific to the River Center complex? Because I can speak to either.
Specific to the River Center problem. You know, what has the city been doing to try and head off this problem? City actions, not what the state has or hasn't done.
In Representative Smith, I mean, we do know, Mr. Smith, we know there's been a lot of bill introductions. I think Representative Lanning's getting at, you know, we all know that bills often don't pass, so what is the city doing to address the problem? Mr. Smith.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Lanning. You know, unfortunately for us, the issues around the River Center and the debt burden and the accumulating deferred maintenance issues and the operating problems that that caused have come in the context, you know, unfortunately, of the larger budget problems that the city's been facing because of LGA, property tax pressures, all those kinds of things. So the city's efforts over the last few years have been focused on doing some restructuring of other debt that is debt between the River Center and the city. For example, the HRA has also invested money, so we've postponed payments so that they can meet the primary obligation, which is the bond payments. That's about the most flexibility that we've been able to offer to the River Center under our own resources. So we can give you some information about how we've basically postponed payments that the River Center would normally have owed back to the HRA from some of the initial financing. But the big nut is $4.5 million a year that goes out to the bondholders. And that's the issue that we're trying to deal with here.
Well, thank you. I guess I would like some more information too, in terms of what the city has done to enhance the revenues that River Center brings in. I'd like to know what affirmative, positive actions the city has been taking to try and address this problem, so it isn't just all falling back on the state and what the state has or hasn't done. Obviously, at some point, we will have to come forward with some state action here, but I need to know what you've been doing to solve the problem yourselves.
And Mayor Coleman and Rep. Mahoney, Mr. Smith, I just want to first just say a couple preliminary things. We've been told we're coming into the floor at 11 and we're recessing. So I think it's worth 5 minutes to kind of finish this up. Otherwise, we've got to come back tonight, which I don't think anyone wants to do, and we're not going to actually vote on this, but this would allow members to get their other questions out. I think Representative Lanning is wise to ask for some more information that we can distribute to the whole committee. And Representative Lanning, you should know, is on this TIF working group who will actually look at all the TIF provisions individually and try to make recommendations. But I hope what Representative Mahoney is hearing and the mayor and all of St. Paul is the tax committee is very interested in trying to find a solution. I don't know if this is it. But I do want to get to hear what Representative Earhart's thoughts on this, and Representative Mowry has a question. Mayor Coleman.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Lanning, I just would like to just add, I think that part of the problem is it's kind of a chicken and egg thing with respect to trying to generate additional revenues. The one of the problems that we have because of the level of debt that we have on this facility is we don't even have the money to market and to reinvest in this facility. To be able to go out to the extent that's necessary, to be able to offer some of the incentives that other facilities like this are offering across the country to bring in groups and various things. We know that we have a strong facility. It's why we were able to land the Republican National Convention, was because of the proximity of the XL and the convention center is a unique asset in this market. But to be able to take advantage of, for instance, this convention coming into town, one of the things that we talked to from other cities that have hosted an event like this is it sets the stage for you to be able to bring in other large-scale events. But the fact is we have no revenue with which to be able to even seize that opportunity in that moment. So it's kind of circular. We'll get you some more additional information, but I do think it kind of shows it's kind of a downward spiral with respect to the ability to sustain this facility.
That's kind of funny.
Madam Chair and Representative Lanning, just to make it perfectly clear, the River Center competes against other venues of approximate size, say in St. Louis or Milwaukee or some of those cities. Almost everyone, well, often they provide the facility rent free in order to create the economic activity in the city, which is the hotel rooms, the bars, and the restaurants. And I'm not sure what time the bars close in those other places, but that's the problem that we as we go forward. We can't do the maintenance, compete with St. Louis, Milwaukee, and other cities like them, and pay the bonds.
Representative Mahoney, on that, before we move to Representative Earhart and Mr. Smith, if you wouldn't mind also providing the committee with information on some ideas that you might have to export the tax onto the users of these facilities. I mean, I think Representative Dabney makes a very good argument that who are the users of these, who are the beneficiaries, and why are the local cities being required to pay for things? I know Representative Wolfhager has put me a note about ticket prices. I would add that, you know, there's the hotel motel tax, there's the restaurant tax, there's the specialty facilities around you that you can tax, there's car rental, there's, you know, Representative Wolfhager's ticket tax. I mean, it might be worth a shot of taking a look at St. Paul, putting together sort of a bucket of tax increases that you can export to the users, not your residents, because the 379 TIF district is a property tax increase on all your residents, too, and has all these effects on the state. But I think it might be worth just the exercise as to what, you know, and of course you would have opponents who would come in and say, oh, you can't raise our hotel tax. But I'm just saying, these are the beneficiaries. You know, you might lose the chamber there in the hospitality industry, but these are the things we have to look at when beneficiaries ask for things, but they don't want to pay for them. I mean, they need to ante up. So if St. Paul could take a look at that, too, I think it'd be helpful. Rep. Mahoney?
Madam Chair, I think this is a problem larger than just St. Paul, mm-hmm. and in reality, we should look in a larger venue. We have many venues that are like this. We have tourism that comes into town, and the metro area basically supports most of that. And we should really look. I've brought forth a couple of proposals on a regional tourism tax. So we are looking at trying to find other venues that we can pay this with.
And we should think about that, because I feel that the hospitality industry, who comes forward and says, we have to have River Center, we need Target Center, we need the Mall of America, you know, well, let's have a statewide tax on the tourism industry. I mean, they can't have it both ways, and people need to start understanding who the beneficiaries are. They are not the local property taxpayers who reside in these communities, and these facilities don't even pay property taxes. So we need to get folks to understand who's benefiting. Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There was something I wanted to say, then I have a question. I was going to suggest, if you don't like all these tax-exempt buildings over here, I have space for the Capitol next to the nuclear reactor that Representative Walsager is going to get me, and I'd be happy to take that burden off of you. But my question is, when the other Coleman was in office, Madam Chair, there was a series of years when there was a lot of bragging rights about no increase in some kind of taxes, which I think were property taxes. If that be the case, are you now playing catch-up, or has that been caught up to where the rest of us are?
Mayor Coleman?
Representative Earhart. There's a long story. I'll try to give you the most condensed version that I can. Throughout the 90s, there were several things that were going on that allowed the city of St. Paul to go an extended period of time, approximately 12 years, without an increase in the levy. There was steady and predictable increases in local government aid. There was additional resources from the federal government, such as the Clinton Cop Program, that allowed us to pay for officers, I think 40 officers in the city of St. Paul through federal sources. There were other sources of revenue, pension fund, freed up dollars. There were a number of things that allowed us to go and extend a period of time. We went from second in terms of tax rates in the city of St. Paul to somewhere probably at the lowest point, somewhere around 76th in terms of metropolitan ranking on tax rate for the city. We have moved back off that, but we're still probably fairly far down that road. We're in 40s or 50s. We don't know exactly what the number would be after a fairly significant levy increase last year. But the problem is that even in spite of all that, and you know it as well as others, the increase in the property taxes that the average homeowner in the city of St. Paul has doubled in the last 5 or 6 years because of the various issues that have occurred. So the property taxpayers have seen no relief. But the city of St. Paul has seen an extremely significant decrease in the amount of revenue that we've had.
Thank you. Perhaps some Wolfhager just has to respond to your nuclear facility that she's placing in your district. Perhaps some Wolfhager.
Chair members, Representative Earhart, you know, I've only been here a year and a half, but I think I figured you out. You're in the same camp with Representative Kahn. You've been here so long that it's not fun anymore unless you're trying to zing somebody. And so to that point, I just would like to say one thing. And I know we're making fun of the Capital City right now, but you know, the Capital wants the state to be considered the hockey state. And I just want to say this. Lake City, who I represent, is the birthplace of water skiing. And they have been lobbying me recently to say, we can't continue calling the state the hockey state. It's got to be the water skiing state. So I don't think you'll ever get that from me.
In Mayor Coleman,
your city.
It's probably lost on you, but what happened, I think, yesterday in taxes is Representative Wolfhager, after Representative Earhart explained how all the revenue in the state really comes from the metro, decided that she would have a bill to put a nuclear facility in his district, and he was actually open to that depending on the price. Anyway, Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, I just want to add one thing,
Mayor Coleman. Representative Earhart also thinks milk comes from a store. He doesn't have any value for rural America and what rural America is.
Madam Chair, before this gets out of hand, I just wanted everyone to realize, these two wonderful friends of mine and colleagues, that I actually have worked at the reactor and inside the can, and have been closer, let's sort of call it containment unit, closer to the fuel rods than I am to Mayor Coleman. So if you want to make fun of it, you should actually take a tour of it.
He does glow in the dark.
Yeah. We want to get to Representative Mullery, and then we're done. We want to hear just a closing comment from St. Paul. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, Representative Dabney did make several of the points I had. But another thing is, it was just mentioned, the pension funds. I don't think anybody understands that during the 90s, the cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul had no cost on that because of the return on investment, and now suddenly with the change in investment, those are huge costs to us. Another thing, Minneapolis is really one that has the tax-exempt property, University of Minnesota, for instance, plus other things. And I don't think Bloomington or Edina have a great amount of it.
27%
somebody made reference to having a sales tax in St. Paul on lodging, etc., like that for this. That was also brought up in Minneapolis on the stadium, and it was, after looking into it, the big winner would not be St. Paul or Minneapolis, either for the stadium or for Excel Center. It's Bloomington. More people go to lodge and go to restaurants and hotels and motels in Bloomington that are going to end up at the stadium or at the Excel Center than any place in the state. So having them raise the tax there to do that would not, it'd be more like saying maybe we should raise the tax on Bloomington also to help Minneapolis and St. Paul in that way.
Representative Mullery, I want you to know I completely agree with you, and I think it should be Seven County, if not the whole state, if we're going to start doing these facilities. I absolutely agree with you, and these are the beneficiaries. These facilities are filling these hotels and these restaurants, and then they're testifying that they don't want to pay for it. So it's very frustrating for me, and Representative Mahoney knows I have this view, as does Representative Dabney, and I think we need to think broader, that when people want the frosting or the goodies that make a state a great place to be, these host communities should not be carrying the bill when they're not receiving a benefit. And I do want to let you know that Ms. Bergman has checked, and we are still waiting to convene. So we're okay. There's no one on the floor. So we did have Representative Coles, who kind of waved us off. But Representative Coles, go ahead, because we're not even on the floor yet. Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I was looking at the bill summary,
You're waiting for us.
I don't think so. There's no one on.
Well, first, Madam Chair, Representative Wolfogger, let me just assure you that you don't have to be here as long as Representative Kahn or Representative Earhart to enjoy zinging people. as you may know, I take great support in doing that on occasion. I was looking at the bill summary, and under the general law exemptions, it talks about the requirement that special laws allowing the duration extension be approved by the city, county, and school, that's waived here. My question was, has the city talked with Ramsey County and the school district? As I look through the packet, I see that I see that you have. So that I answered my own question there. But I want to get back to, you know, I'm interested in trying to help find a solution here. I'm clearly there's a problem. We got to figure out how we're going to resolve it. But I want to go back a little bit to the discussion about the local sales tax, and I guess if we're going to extend the TIF district here, would the city object to a change in the distribution of the local sales tax. It's an issue of, I mean, if we tie the two together, if the tax committee chose to tie the two together, I look at the explanation of what the neighborhood and cultural star programs are, and it's going to be great things, and I don't have any objection to them inherently, but I'm not sure that grants to nonprofit arts organizations, when we have a fiscal problem with the River Center, if we're doing the priority thing, what makes the most sense? So if we did extend the TIF district and thought to also change the distribution of that local option sales tax money, would the city object to that? And maybe you can't answer now.
Rep. Mahoney and Mayor Coleman. Rep. Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Rep. Coles. As the mayor explained earlier, when this was formulated, I was not in high school. I was actually an adult. And
I was an adult in high school, actually, there until I was 23.
and followed it. This was first proposed, first floated, I should put it that way, as a quarter cent sales tax. And it went to the half cent sales tax in order to fund those cultural programs. This was structured within the neighborhood. This is how this we bought into having this put onto them as they portrayed it. So the community at large would be not just upset, they would be enraged, because this has done much as NRP has revitalized and strengthened the neighborhoods of the city of Minneapolis. The STAR program has revitalized and strengthened neighborhoods in St. Paul. Everything from the revitalization of Snelling, Grand, Highland Parkway, starting to work over on the east side of St. Paul, down in Representative Lesh's district. This is basically the only way our neighborhoods have to strengthen their base and to continue to keep our neighborhoods livable areas for the diversity that we have. To the mayor.
Thank you, Representative. What I would like to offer is that there's a broader context to this thing. We have used the STAR dollars that we have in a way to try to provide debt relief generally for our property taxpayers. Right now we're using $3.5 million of the STAR funds for debt service. Now, there's currently a sunset provision on that which brings that ability to do that off at 2010. We also recently issued $17 million worth of bonding to invest in our critical neighborhoods that have a forward-going obligation under these STAR dollars that is going for housing, going for neighborhood revitalization projects, going to really strong and important brick-and-mortar pieces as part of our Invest St. Paul initiative. So in addition to the generalized neighborhood concern and residents' concern about the importance of this program, under the obligations that we have, it simply wouldn't be possible. So I would ask the committee and everyone to kind of put this in the broader context, as Representative Mahoney outlined, the difference between having had an original quarter percent or quarter cent versus a half cent. This is a broader context. We're looking for every possible conceivable way that we can to continue to invest in this, and we are open to all options, but we do need, and I appreciate Representative your understanding of that, we need a solution. We simply cannot continue to move forward without one.
Thank you for that. And Representative West is now going to move House File 4121 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Before we lay it over for possible inclusion, Representative Mahoney, closing thoughts, or Representative West? Mm-hmm. Representative Mahoney.
I would like to thank the chair and the committee for their time today. And if House File 4121 does not suit the tax committee, I look forward to working with all of you to find a solution for the problems the city is, not just City of St. Paul, but all of our metro areas are suffering through.
Thank you for that. Representative West?
I'll leave it at that, ma'am.
Okay, we will lay over House File 4121, and we are adjourned. Thank you, members.